you got a ways to go. If you get lost, Mr. Just keep moving, no matter what.
That's Jesse Winchester. Hope you've enjoyed today's show. Hope you'll be with us next week. For the last 3 hours, you've been listening to Back to the Country on WORTFM 89.9 in Madison, Wisconsin. See you soon. Bye.
Marshall with the BBC News. The British Prime Minister Theresa May has held talks with the opposition Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn in an attempt to find a way to end the political stalemate on Brexit. Mr. Corbyn has told Parliament that any deal must be legally binding. The Prime Minister's decision to work with him has angered some Brexit supporters in her own party. Here's Rob Watson.
I think the first thing to say, it's an extraordinary humiliation for the Prime Minister to have had to turn to Jeremy Corbyn. If you think about it, much of the last 2.5 years was about her seeing and treating Brexit. Many people would say it was a huge mistake as an issue of kind of party management for the Conservative Party. But clearly she's not been able to get the votes through, so now she's had to turn to the Labour leader. But look, Jeremy Corbyn will be well aware that many Labour supporters, Labour voters don't like Brexit one little bit, and so far he has tried to keep a bit of a distance from it.
The Judiciary Committee in the US House of Representatives has voted to issue subpoenas to obtain the entire Mueller report, which investigated Russian attempts to interfere with the 2016 presidential election. The document is currently being held by the Attorney General, William Barr. Gary O'Donoghue reports from Washington.
William Barr has already issued a letter setting out the report's two main conclusions. Firstly, that the Trump campaign did not conspire with Russia, and second, that the special counsel did not come to a view on whether the president had obstructed justice. The Attorney General has also said that the evidence in the report does not support any finding of obstruction. But Democrats want to see the whole document and the evidence gathered. The problem is that some material in the report may be covered by legal and security restrictions.
A spokesman for the Vatican says the president of South Sudan, Salva Kiir, and his rival, the former rebel leader Riek Machar, are due to visit for a spiritual retreat next week. Their fallout in 2013 triggered a civil war that left hundreds of thousands dead. Will Ross reports.
The prospect of these two rivals going on a spiritual retreat together is quite surprising, to put it mildly. Sources in the capital, Juba, say President Salva Kiir will definitely go to the Vatican next week and will meet the Pope. The invitation was also sent to Riek Machar, who's due to become a vice president next month as part of a unity government. If a period of self-reflection, prayer and connecting with God helps push the fragile peace process forward, then it'll be warmly welcomed right across South Sudan.
The outgoing Algerian president, Abdelaziz Bouteflika, has issued a farewell message to his people. Mr. Bouteflika, who was forced to resign on Tuesday after 20 years in power, said he was proud of his time in office. But he admitted that he'd made mistakes and asked Algerians to forgive his shortcomings. You're listening to the latest world news from the BBC. The families of 32 Kenyans who were among the victims of a plane crash last month are suing the American aircraft manufacturer Boeing. They allege that Boeing's 737 MAX 8 aircraft had design faults, which could have led the Ethiopian Airlines flight to crash, killing all 157 people on board. A clean-up operation to recover containers blown from a ship off the coast of the Netherlands has revealed the remains of a 16th-century boat. In the lengthy recovery operation, salvage crews dredged up copper plates. Marine archaeologists were called in after a second haul revealed oak beams rather than the electrical gadgets and plastic products they'd expected to recover. The archaeologists said it was the oldest copper cargo ever found in the Netherlands, dating from the 15th and 16th centuries. The authorities in Peru are investigating the death of a British environmental activist and Christian missionary after his burnt body was found by students in the city of Iquitos. John McManus reports.
The Catholic Church in Peru says that Paul McCauley moved to the country in 1995, where as a lay member of the La Salle Christian Brothers, he worked alongside indigenous people in the riverside towns of the Amazon. He founded the Loreto Environmental Network, and his presence certainly attracted attention. In 2010, he said that the Peruvian government tried to expel him from the country after accusing him of activities which endangered state security and public order. Mr. McCauley's body was discovered at a youth hostel he had founded in Iquitos.
The Sri Lankan government is interviewing applicants for the post of public hangman after pledging to end a moratorium on capital punishment. More than 40 people have been shortlisted for the position, all of them men. The death penalty hasn't been carried out in Sri Lanka since 1976. President Sirisena's promise to reinstate it is the centrepiece of his self-declared war on drugs. BBC News.
6 foot 6 above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level.
Good afternoon. You're listening to A Public Affair here on WORT 89.9 FM Madison. I'm your host for the hour, Molly Stentz, and today we are talking about elections. Yesterday was election day here across the state in Wisconsin, and here in Madison, we have a new mayor, we have a new city council, and we have a new school board. The Wisconsin Supreme Court case justice race that happened yesterday is still too close to call. It was 50-50. Hagedorn has declared victory, but it is certainly headed towards a recount with the margin of votes being so close in that race. So we are going to dive in today and unpack what happened yesterday and talk about our local races. First, we'll start with the mayor. Madison has elected a new mayor. Her name is Satya Rhodes Conway, and she joins us by phone where she is about to give a press conference to the city of Madison. Hello. Good afternoon, Satya.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us today. So how did this election make you feel?
I'm really excited about the possibility to move the city forward. I'm just really thankful for everyone who voted for me, and I'm really excited to get to work. In fact, we've already started the transition process this morning.
Yeah, so you've got only 2 weeks to hit the ground running. What is that going to look like, working with the Soglin administration for the transition over the next 2 weeks?
Well, I'm happy to say that I think it's going to be a smooth transition. We met with the mayor and many department heads and folks in his office this morning to start that. There's a lot of ground to cover, and we'll be doing that over the next 2 weeks. I've also reached out to the entire city council, and we will be continuing to reach out to other leaders in the community and in surrounding municipalities over the course of the next couple of days. We're pretty focused on getting a good team in place for the mayor's office as our first priority, and then we'll be able to get to work on the agenda.
And what are your first priorities for the city?
Well, you know, throughout the campaign, we've been talking about housing, transit, racial equity, and being prepared for climate change, and we're going to keep talking about those things, and I'll have more to say on that soon.
All right. Satya Rhodes Conway, mayor-elect of Madison, won with 62% of the vote yesterday. She takes office in just a few weeks here. Thanks so much. I know you've got to run to your press conference. Thanks so much for joining us here.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Take care. And with me in the studio here, we have two reporters who cover local government to unpack all of the races and all of what happened yesterday. We have with us Dylan Brogan, staff writer of Isthmus.
Hi.
And we have Nagasi Tessafa-Michael.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Who covers education here for the Cap Times. So let's start with the big news. I feel like the big news is the Madison mayor.
Absolutely.
So after 22 years off and on, the Soglin administration will come to an end. Dylan.
Well, never say never. The mayor currently is just 73 years old. So who knows? Bernie Sanders is running for president. So I wouldn't say never. But no, I mean, did anyone, I think a lot of people thought that Mayor-elect Rhodes Conway had a real good shot, but I don't think anyone expected her to have such a huge blowout like this. And just doing yesterday, it was like 8:15. I'm filling out ward by ward the maps, and Soglin is losing in the outskirts of the city. And it became very clear early on that this was not going to be a good night for him, and he pretty much lost in every part of the city. The isthmus is, I mean, he was Mayor-elect Rhodes Conway was getting three times as many votes out of those districts, and won the vast majority of the voting wards, and it was very decisive, her victory.
And what do you think it says for the city?
Well, I think it's easy to say, hey, they must be ready for a change. I thought that the mayor might, you know, was in a strong position. I think people think the city is headed in the right direction. They know the mayor, obviously. I don't think there's a universal dislike of him, but I think him jumping out of the race to run for governor and then jumping back in, a lot of people had kind of already picked their horse then, and it even some longtime supporters, I think, were really torn between on what to do, and particularly when Mayor Soglin practically endorsed Satya in July, right? And so I think a lot of the advantages he had of incumbency, he frankly just wasted them because he was indecisive. And I think Mayor-elect Rhodes Conway, she just worked it. She worked harder. She was everywhere, and she earned this victory.
What do you think is next for the mayor? I know he was asked last night by many reporters. Everyone's kind of wondering what happens next. He's a little coy, didn't say.
Well, former mayor Dave Cheslevich and Mayor Soglin, they certainly had kind of a storied rivalry. But I know on good authority that the mayor, while Mayor Dave was in office, was very much a resource. And I imagine that Mayor Soglin will very much be a resource for the new mayor, too.
And will he get a column in Isthmus too now?
Will he? We would love that, I think.
Right alongside Dave.
Yes. I think it is interesting to see what happens, because he has been part of the narrative and his persona, and things are going to be very different in terms of just how issues are framed and where opposition, which there will be, springs up. And I think it really is sort of a new era in city government.
And what issues or projects do you think might change as a result of the mayor's office changing hands? Do you see anything Judge Doyle Square? Do you think that's going to take a detour?
You know, I was really surprised that didn't come up more in the campaign, because, man, you ask people about that, it is just the project that from hell, right? It's just everything that could go wrong has seemingly gone wrong. People don't understand where it's at. The people are getting sued. The developers aren't happy. The council isn't happy. So I don't know what Mayor-elect Rhodes Conway is going to do to necessarily fix that. I think that the public market, that's one thing that she really went out of her way to not commit to. She liked certain aspects of it, but that was something that that Mayor Soglin said he was going to get done if given another term. So I think that might be up for discussion. I think the focus on bus rapid transit and affordable housing, not that the mayor, especially on affordable housing and equity issues, I think he was very much attuned to that. But transit and climate change, I think that those will be bigger priorities for the city now.
Yeah, so affordable housing, he mentioned that last night. He didn't really say goodbye to Madison. He didn't really make kind of a big speech, you know, talking about his legacy, I feel like.
But he sort of defended his record in a way.
He talked about affordable housing and almost, I mean, I think he did actually say that he was worried about the future.
Yes, he was.
And what will happen, and whether the city will continue to be able to grow our housing stock.
And Mayor Soglin loves to bring up what happened right before he was in office, right? So that's kind of how he opened his speech, by saying in 2011, developers and just the city's relationship was very fraught, that there were developers who we kind of need to build affordable housing, according to the mayor, that who said they were never going to work here again. And that in the last 8 years that he said he was proud of this partnership that he's built, and that, hey, there are, he did lower the vacancy rate, or I think it went from 2% to 3%, which is on the way to the right direction, right? And it's a huge pressing issue. And he's worried that there's going to be some animosity now between developers who came out huge for him in this election. I mean, that was his most, that was a, his base in a weird way. But, that they're maybe worried that the city is going to change directions in terms of that and maybe not be as developer friendly. And but he also talked about his legacy in terms of racial disparities, and I think he took it really personally that that people were saying that Madison is a racist city. He kept pushing back on that, right? It's just like he tried to acknowledge that there are systemic issues here, but that the people in Madison aren't racist and the city itself isn't racist, and that he's made some significant gains in terms of African-American unemployment, in terms of raising household incomes, in terms of providing new opportunities with the Market Ready program to get young people of color involved in businesses, right? That it was something that he said we should be ashamed that we don't have more people of color who own businesses, and that's like preventing intergenerational wealth. And I think his roots were really showing there. He took it very personally when people said he wasn't doing enough, and he defended and said, hey, he did make progress on this, and he hopes that continues.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing that it went down like this, right? I thought... I guess I'm not surprised, but I'm surprised by that big of a percentage victory in terms of Mayor-elect Rhodes Conway. She just cleaned up.
Yeah, people. That's what I heard over and over. People saying they wanted a change. I was talking to a local historian who really called this a generational shift. That this, you know, Soglin being this iconic figure when he was first elected. And, you know, really kind of campaigned on this anti-establishment,
sure,
right? Like, you know, it was him against the man, right? And there was more conservative voices, mm-hmm, in his city government at that time, and that's changed. That maybe is somewhat of the Soglin legacy.
It's weird to call him the establishment, though, because in a weird way, he was more anti-establishment, and in his time in office, he had. I can't use the word I want to use, but he, you know, he's had issues with virtually every segment of the population or group, and, you know, notoriously grumpy, and the council would be very distressed and call him the only adult. He acts like he's the only adult in the room and get mad at his lectures.
Right.
So in that way, I mean, like the Dane Dems, I mean, the list of elected officials, those were not on his side. But yet again, it's hard to say he was a change candidate, right? He basically was like, hey, I'm doing the right things and I want 4 more years to keep doing them. And I think people really were just ready for something new.
Who's going to write the memoirs?
No, that's going to be hard. So John Nichols, probably.
Probably. We're talking about local government races here on A Public Affair. I'm your host, Molly Stentz. With us in the studio, we have two guests who are local reporters who cover government for you. We will take your phone calls. If you have a question about yesterday's election, call in 608-256-2001, and we will do our best to answer your questions.
Did Dave Blaska win?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, but let's talk about school board, because that was almost, I feel like that was even the feistier race of the local. I mean, everyone was watching the mayor because it's like, is this going to be an upset? But I feel like in terms of passion that people had about local elections, really the school board was where it was at. Nagasi, you covered this. What was your sense of the school board races this time?
Definitely. I think what I've learned from talking with candidates and their supporters was that, you know, this year was a strange year in that there were so many people running for school board. There were 3 seats that were up for an election. And when they were up 3 years ago, all of the incumbents ran uncontested. So this was definitely an impassioned race where a lot of people had a lot of frustrations with what was going on.
Yeah, I remember not too long ago, no one wanted to be on the school board, right? I mean, it was budget cut time, and there was a lot of tough things that they had to do. It was not a very desirable position. But now we had, you know, all these seats had contested races, primary, you know? I mean, so what are the main issues at stake? What do you think the main issues of this race were?
I think the biggest issue was, how does the school district find a way to make a dent into the racial achievement gaps that have persisted over the last few decades here in Madison? And a lot of the candidates, nearly each candidate highlighted that, but also had very different ideas on how to achieve that goal. And that's sort of where the division lines between candidates were made in this race. I think additionally, there were other issues in terms of how do we expand access to the various programs, such as a full day forte for students and other early childhood care options for families in Madison. And there was also the issue of, you know, how open does Madison want to be to charter schools? And that was especially important in the C3 race because it featured a candidate who runs an independent charter school that has had a lot of controversy in Madison, especially with a lot of people being very anti-charter school and anti-voucher schools.
Kaleem Kerr, yeah. And interesting, you know, in talking about the issues, and we had a slate of people of color in every, you know, running in every seat. And so we should mention the winners were Ananda Murili, Ali Muldrow. Kaleem Kerr did not win, right? So Chris Carusi did win, and as you mentioned, you know, that the charter school issue was it followed him through.
Definitely, and that was probably the biggest hurdle that Kaleem Kerr had to overcome. He had sort of come full circle in terms of his run for school board this year, especially given that the school board voted down a charter school proposal he had in 2011, and there was a lot of emotions after that vote in 2011 and that sort of brought him back into this race. And the difference between, you know, Kaleem and Ali and Ananda was that Ananda and Ali weren't necessarily held back as much as Kaleem was by the fact that he runs one city schools. It's an issue that I think supporters of Chris Carusi really harped on, whether it was through social media, at forums, things like that, claiming that he, by serving on the board, he would have a conflict of interest of sorts, and things like that. But it was definitely a big win for Ali Muldrow and Ananda Murili, both women of color. All three of the candidates of color were endorsed by Adelante, which is a local political advocacy group started by current school board member Gloria Reyes to help increase the amount of candidates of color in local office. So obviously with Kaleem losing, there was a bit of a mixed bag in terms of their results. But I mean, now the 7-person school board is going to have 3 women of color, which is definitely an improvement on where the school board has previously been.
And all women.
Yes, that's the first time that's happened in Madison.
Ever?
Ever.
Wow, I didn't realize that. I knew it was that for my tenure here. I've never seen that before. But
well, it'll be interesting to see what happens in terms of the frequent protesters in regards to big issues like those educational resource officers and how that changes that dynamic.
Yeah. Do you know how leadership might change on the school board?
So the school board usually holds its leadership elections sometime over the summer, and usually the board president has a bit more leeway to put things on the agenda and whatnot. But there definitely is going to be a lot of push for change from what previous boards have done, especially on the issue of school resource officers. Both Ali Muldrow and Ananda Murali said that they don't support the having the police officers in schools, and that might change the calculus of whether the current contract can be renewed at the end of the year.
And given the newcomers to the board, I mean, the board is staggered, so you don't have intentionally massive turnover, but still, you know, almost half the seats is a fair turnover. And the district's going to be facing some challenges with upgrading their facilities. I was talking to outgoing school board member Dean Loomis last night, and he said their referendum that they want to put forward next year to upgrade the high schools is going to be a chunk of change. It's going to be a big ticket item that voters will have to decide whether they want to do. How do you think the leadership on the board and having people brand new to the seats, do you think that will impact?
Yeah, I definitely think they have a tall task ahead of them, especially when it comes to the referendum. Even though some other referenda in other school districts have passed with great frequency over the past few years, there's still not an exact dollar amount on how large this referendum could be, but it could be upwards of, you know, $280 million, which is, for an average taxpayer in Madison, it could be a lot of money.
It's a chunk of change. Uh-huh. And what do you guys think the relationship between the school board and city council and the mayor's office will be? Because we've seen these kind of flare-ups about the police officers, right? And how that contract works and who has control over them. I don't know. Either anyone want to take on that question? Do you think that?
Well, it's like two different governments, right? And there's a lot of overlap, obviously. But like some people I've heard ask, like, well, why does the school even pay for Madison police officers? I mean, and it's like they're servicing another government. That's sort of how it's viewed. I'm really interested to see how this debate shakes out, because just because you get rid of the educational resource officers doesn't mean there aren't going to be cops in school.
Right, right.
And I think there's going to be a lot of, I think the tempers are very high at this moment. I think the district is in a lot of ways in crisis. And the school board has been a little bit paralyzed as of lately. And it's really the only body now that, you know, Walker busted all the unions, that can push back on the district. Right now, Superintendent Jennifer Cheatham has a lot of power, and I'll tell you, she is not popular.
Nagasi, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the one thing I would add is to maybe one area to look at is the City Education Committee. It's sort of the one place where the school board that has representatives from the school board, the district, the city, and the county. And just a few months ago, it almost voted to dissolve itself because it's been having challenges to meet a quorum each month. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of
Low turnout, low interest.
Yeah, a lot of confusion as to like who should be doing what and who has jurisdiction over certain issues and things like that. And I think there's, especially with a new administration in the mayor's office, it's going to be interesting to see how they partner with the school district to sort of figure out a lot of these issues and how to actually work together instead of having some of the antagonistic.
I mean, do you think, given that, I think both Ananda and Ali ran campaigns on, you know, really inclusiveness, bringing more parents in, more community members, you know, increasing representation on the board. How do you think that is going to work with the current protest climate?
I think it definitely, their elections sort of signal a desire for some more collaborativeness on the board and between the district and the board. How that looks like in practice will be very interesting, especially when protests happen at, you know, the next few school board meetings, and also just the sort of regular frustration of, you know, it's great to have these conversations, but how do we turn these into actual action that can affect regular students and families in a quick way.
You know, and in Mayor Sagan's credit, you know, the school district and the city did collaborate on after-school programs and, you know, meal programs during the summer. And, you know, there's some possibilities in terms of, like, youth unemployment. And I know Mayor Sagan, when he was running, was saying, you know, he sort of takes after the mantra of the mayor of Boston, who said every teen who wants a job should have a job. I think it is hard when you, a school district in particular, where you, I mean, a five-year-old, right? There's just like more factors than anything in the world of the kid. And how do you change all the awful things about society? You can't change all that at once, you know? And how do you give kids who aren't given a shot?
Right.
Like that's, I don't know if any board can do that.
Especially when money is a limiting factor, which it always seems to be.
And we pay for schools in like just an insane way, and just special education, right? The federal law that you have to provide these services to every student, to give every student education. But the federal government doesn't pay for it.
Right.
I mean, it's just a complete, there's a million unfunded mandates like that.
Right. We're talking local government here at WORT today and the results of Election Day with two of your local government reporters here in town. We have Dylan Brogan from Isthmus and Negasi Tesfamichael from the Cap Times. And we're taking your calls. Do you have questions about the election results or what happened? What city government is going to look like? Changes? Are you excited? Are you worried? Are you nervous? You hopeful? Tell us what's on your mind. 608-256-2001.
Yeah, if you want to know how your precinct voted, can tell you that real quick.
You do?
Sure.
You've got
it. Just name one.
Nice.
Yep.
All right.
I guess we'll see.
I think there's too many to go over, but
yes.
But challenge us, listeners, if you've got a challenge. Dylan is up for it. So we talked a little bit about voter turnout. It was pretty high yesterday, right, for a spring election, mm-hmm. which is still low by, I think, standards of modern democracy. But
43, yeah, 44. Well, get this though, right? So that Supreme Court race, which is the conservative candidate, right, Judge Hagedorn, is up mm-hmm. by, he's declaring victory. It's about 6,000 votes ahead. That's a lot to make up for in a recount. Yeah. That is not looking good. And I mean, I think they will do a recount, but that's a lot to swing, right?
Yeah.
But there were
more votes, right, this year than last.
Well, sure. In terms of the spring elections, there was more than 2015, but go back to 2011, right?
Right.
That was
right.
A hot
the
race.
In
Prosser, a conservative justice won that race.
Right.
But there was 30,000 more people in Dane County who voted in that election. So a fifth of that, and Neubauer would have won or been in obviously been very close. Half of them, if they followed like the 80% of Dane County residents who voted for Lisa Neubauer, if that holds true of those 30,000 people who didn't vote in this election, she would have easily won.
So do you think that has to do with the campaign that Neubauer ran and not really running kind of out there campaigning on liberal issues?
That was weak, wasn't it? It was weak.
Yeah, so
what did that inspire?
Yeah, but also, right, 2011, you had this heated, heated matchup, mm-hmm. right, in the wake of the recalls. You had the Walker administration was still fresh and new, and there was some sense at that time that maybe it wouldn't last, and, you know, there was kind of this thought that things could change at that moment.
Yeah.
So then, you know, fast forward 8 years later, the Dems flip back the governor's seat. Do you think they were, and, you know, we should say these are ostensibly nonpartisan races,
yes.
except the maps kind of
no, they're partisan
mirrored.
Races.
They like mirrored the Evers Walker race, right? So
a lot less voters,
right? So why was that?
Well, I think two things, right? I think there was two strategies, right? The traditional one is for whatever the judge is I'm fair, I'm independent, and I will put politics aside. And that was heard over and over and over again from Judge Neubauer. Now, Judge Brian Hagedorn, he said some of that stuff too, but maybe people thought that he was a weaker candidate than he was because a lot of troubling comments to a lot of voters came out. you know, comparing homosexuality to bestiality, running an anti-gay private school. Mm-hmm. I mean, to a lot of people, it seemed unconscionable that somebody with seemingly radical viewpoints on a political level would be elected to the Supreme Court, and maybe they didn't. Maybe that caused turnout to be slightly lower in the big strongholds like Dane County and Milwaukee County.
Do you think that money mattered in that race, where you saw these kind of last-minute infusions of cash in these TV ads in the last few days?
Maybe,
of the
but
campaign?
Neubauer looks like she might have probably. I mean, I think we're going to have to wait to see the final numbers, but it looks like she at least was right around the same amount, if not a little more.
So do you think it was the grassroots get out the vote?
It's because Dems didn't turn out.
And
that's why Hillary Clinton lost.
And why?
I mean, I don't know what to tell you. They didn't like her. I mean, they just didn't feel like their vote was necessary. They didn't. And when you're a purple state, right, it is all about getting your folks out.
Yeah.
And sure, you can, maybe there's 3 or 4% you can sway, but if you don't get that 20-30% that is your massive turnout, you lose.
Well, so I was looking at Craig Gilbert's work from the Journal Sentinel,
yes.
You know, analyzing.
And everyone should.
Yes, yeah. Right.
I second that.
What will we do if he ever retires? We'll be lost. So he was breaking down the differences, right? And the two things that jumped out are Brown County and Milwaukee County, mm-hmm. right? So Brown County, which I remember, you know, when I first started reporting, was really considered a swing county, right? Green Bay went back and forth. You still see kind of elements of that in, you know, Senate and the Assembly is mixed in terms of representation for Green Bay. You've got Republicans, you've got Democrats. But since Walker came, you know, since 2010, it's gone solidly Republican until Evers, right? Mm-hmm. And so what's going on with Brown County?
It's one of those areas.
I got to
go ahead. I got to see you.
Anything to add? What do you
I'm
think?
About as speechless as everyone at this table is. It's hard to really pin down exactly what happened in Brown County in terms of its flip.
Right, because they did go for Dallet.
Yeah, and think about the campaign she ran, where instead of keeping up this farce that she's some sort of nonpartisan thing, she was way more open about how she was going to defend liberal values.
But compared to Burns?
Not compared to him, but
right. I mean,
but still, much more so than Judge Lisa Neubauer. And I think, I mean, and it's hard to say because I would know more for like the governor's race, and it's like kind of a different electorate, but. You know, there are Trump Bernie Sanders voters out there. There are Trump Obama
Absolutely.
Voters. And it's not so much why voters made their decision, is about who didn't show up.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you strip out the kind of the ideological you know, the rhetoric in the campaign and you looked at kind of at an experience level, if you were the kind of voter that were just looking at, okay, well, who's got more experience, right? Who's served longer, who has more cases that they've heard, right? It wasn't close, right? Like, Neubauer had years on the guy.
And, like, the endorsement of practically every judge in the whole state.
Yeah. So, well, we will keep following this.
A little above my pay grade here, because I wish, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I would guess, I think a lot of people are very surprised that she could potentially lose. Judge Neubauer, that is.
Yeah, given the Evers victory.
Given the Evers victory, and given that some people just like can't even believe that someone would support a judge like that.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Anti-gay school, or like if you're a student or a staff or a parent, if you just say, you mention you might be gay, you're gone?
Right.
Yep. It's 2019.
And how different from Madison, where we had the mayor elect throwing her victory party, right, at a dance club, right, and like, mm-hmm. you know, and very strong support from the LGBT community, you know, the first openly gay mayor elected, and you know, Madison certainly wasn't the only city. You saw that in Chicago too. So you see you know, such a stark contrast between.
And but in a weird way too, it's not like, and I think you know, it's not that Mayor elect Rhodes Conway ran away with or didn't talk about it. She said it's very important for her to run as an openly gay woman for young people to see that, you know, things do get better and that they aren't limited in their opportunities. But I also think it's like just not a big of a deal anymore. Who cares?
Yeah. I have to say, I saw more people taking selfies with Satya last night than at any politician, any kind of campaign party recently in recent memory. I mean, people were lining up. They wanted to take a picture with their new mayor. That's a change. What do you want to get in here, Nagasi? What do you think?
Definitely. I definitely agree with the point about Satya. I would also say that, you know, the fact that yesterday's election was so close at the Supreme Court level, especially off the heels of another very close election last November, sort of really sets the stage for a pretty big fight in 2020. And it'll be interesting to see how the different parties try to strategize for 2020.
Right. So you have the DNC being held in Milwaukee being the largest source of Democratic votes and also the biggest swing vote, right? The biggest determinant in an election. If Milwaukee voters don't show up, it makes a big impact.
If they don't show up, and if they don't show up in Dane County too, Dems don't do well.
Right. So local level, so we're talking local elections. You can join us 608-256-2001. Unpacking what happened here in the city of Madison, school board, city council. So we're going to gain a new mayor. We're going to gain a 50% turnover in city council.
Man, our local elections are so much better than the state elections. It's just much more interesting in terms of how everything shakes out. And then you can be surprised, too, you know, in a very genuine way.
Were you surprised?
To a certain extent, I was. But I think I also tried to make myself prepared for anything, and so I wouldn't be too surprised.
You had that David Blaska wins headline all ready to go. Now that would have been a surprise.
Yeah, no, that definitely would have been. And I mean, to his credit, he Blaska was able to get 30% of the vote, and he did win a few precincts near La Follette High School where school safety issues were pretty big, and that was sort of the central message of his campaign.
All right, and on his campaign website, it says, "Mr. Blaska, your positive behavior coach," which is just pretty incredible.
Well, we're going to go to the phones and take your calls. So 608-256-2001 is the number to call. And we have Beth with us. And Beth has a question about the wording in the Supreme Court race. Beth, thanks for joining us.
Hi. I know you're discussing more of the local elections, which I wasn't that surprised about. I just didn't, again, like you guys, didn't think Soglin would get trounced as much as he did. However, with the Supreme Court, I really do think it became more of a wedge issue because they kept using, the Dems kept using abortion in that one ad, and that brought people out that normally would never have gone out. I think they, if they had just talked about her credentials and, you know, and her experience and stayed with that and that, I mean, there were people, I was working the polls out in a rural area, and there were people that came out specifically because of that, you know, that had never voted in a long time. And
to
it
vote,
breaks your heart.
Beth, to vote against her?
Yeah. Yes. Because to them, all of a sudden it became, oh, she's pro-abortion.
Do you think the Dems made that the issue, or do you think the GOP?
I think the Dems in that one ad, when they went after Hagedorn, they kept using that word instead of saying it's about women's health issues.
Yeah.
That's how I see it. I perceive it as, I don't know who they're paying to put these ads on, and I think they've got to dig deep and find somebody that really gets the people out there, you know, because it's not working. And look where we are for the next how many friggin' years.
Well, I'll tell you what, Beth, you know, you can't get more pro-choice than Senator Tammy Baldwin, right? She doesn't talk about this stuff.
And she doesn't talk about it.
And yet it was her campaign folks working on Neubauer's campaign.
That's what's interesting about it, right? Yeah.
It's very interesting because it's disappointing. I mean, over the years, you know, since Walker, if they had just maybe talked a little more about this guy and Walker and, you know, besides all of his wacko comments and I just can't believe where we are. I got it. I really felt it was going to go this way, especially when the rural counties came in. And isn't it interesting that there's another glitch, you know, in another red county, you know, that that they had to do hand counts? I mean, I'm not saying, yeah. But it's like, holy cow, you know, here we are. And unbelievable.
Yeah.
For me, this, you know, I've been here a long time, and it's sad. I've been here since the early 70s, and it's like, what the hell? Pardon me, but. You know.
Yeah. So, well, and I wonder too, with the choice of Hagedorn, who was evangelical and was, you know, and certainly I saw a lot of Republican ads, you know, emphasizing his positions and emphasizing the fact that Neubauer was supported by Planned Parenthood. I mean, that was, you know, they turned out the vote. So I want to go to Deborah. I've got another call coming in. Deborah also wants to talk about the Supreme Court race. Hi, Deborah. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. Yes, what I wanted to say was I really feel that the campaign was not run very well at all. I heard over and over again, you know, Hagedorn saying, they're attacking my religion. They're attacking my religion. And yet we didn't have any comeback to, no, we're attacking your belief, and we could have had parents get on and talk about their children and how they were suffering or possibly committed suicide. We could have had gay people come on and say, we're attacking your belief, but you are attacking our life. And there just wasn't that type of emotion put in. It was just a very kind of cold, and I think that why, you know, some people just kind of tuned it out. And the other thing that really bothered me was that they didn't really talk about any cases at all, where I hear that with other, like this case and that case. They didn't compare how they were as judges.
Right. Well, interestingly, I mean, there was an article in Isthmus by Bill Leaders who looked at their records.
Yeah, they didn't vote that differently.
Which is really interesting,
yeah.
Right? Then that maybe didn't get a lot of traction, because I think it kind of came out right before a lot of the the incendiary writings he had on the blog was known. So so we'll see. We'll see what the record, you know, will be going forward. But it certainly is going to be a sharp distance, you know, from Shirley Abrahamson.
Yes, it is.
So thanks for the call, Deborah. If you want to get in on the conversation, 608-256-2001 is the number. We've got a call from Terry with a comment about style over substance in the election. You're on the air, Terry.
Well, hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Thank you for the show. In several places, I believe style over substance. One is I looked at the mayor's race, and I see a city... that is just was proclaimed that the greenest city in the country, a city that's one of the top eight in economic development, a person who's had years of experience and has handled crisis very well, as opposed to someone who has very little background and no leadership. And I look at the school board. I see T.J. Mertz, who did a fabulous job on the school board, and yet he gets voted out. So I believe that there's a lot of identity politics going on. It's the people actually looking at the accomplishments that were done by the people who lost this election, unfortunately. And as far as the Supreme Court race, I can't understand when we know that there's a heavy Catholic domination in Brown County through Foxborough Valley, why Planned Parenthood will be up there pounding so hard in those areas when certainly, I don't think that's a message we should have been sending.
Yeah, and what do you think the impact is going to be of losing those the more experienced candidates, like you mentioned? Like,
well, I have no idea where they're going to go. I have no idea what's going to happen in the school board. Are we going to open these up? Are we going to take any protections out of the schools? I have no idea, because there was no plans laid out for what's the direction in this city. I hear about this fast bus rate.
You're not going to be riding that bus, Fritter?
Yeah, I ride the bus every day. And but where are we going to come up with $200 million to pay for this bus? We don't have regional transit authority. So there's a lot of pie in the sky being talked about and no substance. And yet, because of identity, we lost someone who could have probably led us through some of this, who in 2010 kept the city together and made it the economic engine of the state. So I really have a hard time understanding the vote, unless it's entirely identity politics and it shows in the Mertz race and the Soglin race.
Interesting point. Thanks for the call. It sounds like Dylan wants to jump in on this.
Well, just good to always hear from Terry. I think he's right. I mean, I think it did. There, truth be told, right? Mayor Soglin and Mayor-elect Rhodes Conway, they don't disagree on a whole heck of a lot. And she emphasized style, that she'd be more collaborative, that she'd be more open. And the mayor did not pretend to be anything but the mayor. And it's, I mean, it's hard to say now that being an old white guy ain't what it used to be, I guess.
Negasi.
Yeah, I think I would also sort of echo the thoughts about, you know, being more collaborative. I think in the seat five race, Ananda Murali really hammered home the idea that she would be more collaborative with school board members, and TJ Mertz has been one of his main goals has been to push the district and the school board to be more transparent and more accountable. And sometimes that sort of left him on his own in terms of, fighting for transparency and whatnot. So with TJ leaving the board, it definitely it takes a lot of institutional memory with him and a lot of that push for being more open.
Who's going to do the blog? Who's going to do this?
Well, and these school board races have kind of, and I think this story is yet to be written, but I think have really divided Progressive Dane and that faction in ways that it's never been divided before. And that in a weird way that the Dane Dems, who are certainly progressive, but maybe not as leftist as Progressive Dane, I think people in Progressive Dane want to champion people of color. And sometimes that means supporting a more conservative candidate. And I think that's hard for people to wrap their heads around.
Yeah. And the phones are lighting up. We got just a few minutes left, 608-256-2001. We're going to turn next to Tina. Tina wanted to jump in on the school board race. What's on your mind, Tina?
Well, kind of what some people have already been saying, and I think it's a huge loss to not have TJ. And I like and admire Ananda as well, but I think TJ unfortunately got pigeonholed as being kind of adversarial. Former school board members were, I think, kind of really unfair and inaccurate about him in the media. And so I think I would just hope that Ananda and Chris and Ali all kind of take up that mantle of TJ and ask the board questions. We have a superintendent who is pretty much shutting down everything, and so I just hope that we don't lose that with PJ's departure from the board. Thanks for the show. You.
Yeah, thanks, Tina. God, let's see if we can squeeze in one more call here. We've got Eric on the line responding to past caller. Hi, Eric.
Hey there. Yeah, I wanted to respond to the caller that said it was style over substance and sort of, certainly we've seen that Soglin has lots of experience and he's done wonderful things from helping the city through crisis or whatever, but in terms of Satya Rhodes Conway, our new mayor-elect, I mean, this is a woman who's been at the executive level of a think tank that advises mayors around the country for over a decade. So it would be very disingenuous to say that there's not substance there. In fact, when she declared, I didn't think she would be on my radar as someone I would go for, but then I voted for her because I listened to these candidates, and she had so much substance. It was really impressive. So I would push back on the idea it was style over substance. Same in the TJ Mertz and Ananda Murali race. I mean, Ananda has done master's level work in education, leadership, and policy, and she also works directly on racial disparities at the state level. So to bring that expertise onto our school board is really a matter of bringing on expertise, not somebody just because we like their style.
Yeah.
I think the race where it's tough, where we did maybe have style over substance, is the Supreme Court race, where we have a guy who ran on these sort of red meat conservative issues. Probably we had a lot of money that pumped in last minute. It'll be interesting to see how those numbers come out versus someone that is a well-respected jurist who has far more experience, there's far more experience and expertise there on the behalf of Neubauer. So that's the one that's surprising to me that really could, you could say, is style over substance. But
Eric, do you think with the local races, Yeah. Do you think with the local races, it's because the candidates actually agree on the majority of their positions? So, you know, we didn't have, I mean, in talking to people that have covered the city far longer than any of us, you know, they've said there used to be some real knockout fights about the direction the city would go in, you know, huge projects.
Not talking about taxes, are we?
Right. You know, kind of conservative versus liberal. And now the races have become a lot closer, right? You know, in terms of position, in terms of ideology, leadership of the city, there's perhaps, you know, far more agreement on the whole. So therefore, the conversation has to kind of turn to those, I don't know if you want to call it style or you want to call it leadership or...
You got Dave Rip on the county board literally holding down the only conservative seat left in the county. And that really changed rapidly after Governor Walker came in, didn't it? And the only thing I have to say about the style and substance thing in terms of Mayor Soglin and Ms. Rose Conway is that she obviously was very qualified. I don't think anyone, even the mayor, said that. Right. But if there was one person who was more qualified to be mayor to Sandia Rhodes Conway, it's Paul Soglin.
Yeah.
So, and it's not just, you can, style is a substance in a way.
Well, and I think what the vote says, too, is that the leadership styles do matter to people and collaboration and relationships do matter, right? And that's why you saw a lot of alders, you saw a lot of, you know, the county executive, other peers kind of, you know, jumping into this race where sometimes they just, you know, stand back, sit it out and, you know, take what comes and work with whoever gets elected.
You know, Mayor Soglin made it pretty easy for them, too, because there was this whole 2-month, 3-month period when he was seemingly out of the race.
Right. Right. So we've just got a few minutes left, but I want to hear what you're looking forward to covering, what you're watching, what you'll be writing about in the weeks to come as local government changes hands. Nagasi, what are you looking ahead towards?
Yeah, so I'll be definitely looking to see what the new board prioritizes, especially as this school year winds down and they head into the summer where things might be a little slower, but they're doing a lot of planning for next year. I think especially the top ticket item is probably the SRO contract to see whether police officers will be in the high schools next year. And then also, if they're not, what other supports systems will be in place in schools across the district.
Dylan, what are you looking forward to?
Well, I want to see what happens with the public market. I think that's one thing that we a little bit up in the air. I think it will be very telling. The mayor of Madison is an incredibly powerful position. If only because, I mean, they get credit for things they don't deserve credit for, and they get blamed for things that they shouldn't get blamed for. And the selection of city staff and those priorities is really important too. And I'll be interesting to see how she diverts from the well-trotted path that Mayor Soglin has left her.
Right. And with the backing of the council, that's...
But your taxes will go up.
That's huge, right? I mean, that's huge. You know, we've got...
Is.
If she's got the council on board,
I'm just
has
telling
the budget
you, the
authority?
Council is never going to get along with the mayor. They're just not. I mean, it's just
how
it's set up.
How long's the honeymoon?
No, I think it's already over.
No way.
April 17th? I mean, and it's just like, and former alders have told me this. It's just like they're naturally sort of in opposition.
Sure.
Because if you're a mayor, you are the de facto sort of image and leader of a city, and you want to do things, you want to put forward your agenda. Well, the council has all their
Absolutely.
Own ideas.
Absolutely.
And that puts them instantly in conflict.
You got 20 different people that are repping all different parts of the city, and we should say now we have more women that were elected and more people of color. So we have a more representative
50-50
representative council now to work with. So follow stories.
Yes, but definitely a historic win in many, many ways. And pretty interesting too, right? That Madison and Chicago, right?
Right.
They've really shown what this community is about in a lot of ways.
Right. So you can follow all the reporting on your local government, both in print and online, here on the radio. You can check out Dylan Brogan's work at Isthmus. You can check out Nagasi Tessa Michael's work at the Cap Times. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Molly.
This has been A Public Affair here on WORT 89.9 FM. I'm your host, Molly Stentz. Please stay tuned for Letters in Politics coming up next.
Six above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground, another pirate station. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before. We bring the sound communication of our tribal war. Dark vision fly by helicopters in the night. Attempt triangulation of our station in the fight.
You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison. Up next is Letters in Politics.
This is Pacifica Radio's Letters of Politics. On today's show...
By definition of itself, Russia is absolutely European. It's absolutely Western country. But because it borders on all these other territories, because of its long history fighting with the Mongols and fighting with the Lithuanian knights, and its definition of itself are European, and yet it's consistent to say... We are a separate civilization. We are a different country.
Nina Khrushcheva is the great-granddaughter of Nikita Khrushchev, the former premier of the Soviet Union. She is now a professor of international affairs at the New School University in New York City. Recently, she traveled across her home country and has written a book about it. It's called In Putin's Footsteps, Searching for the Soul of an Empire Across Russia's 11 Time Zones. Nina Khrushcheva joins us next for a conversation on Russia today and its history. That's next on Letters in Politics. But first, the news.
With the BBC News. The British Prime Minister, Theresa May, has faced a furious backlash from Brexit supporters in her own party for enlisting the opposition Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, to try to break the deadlock. Two junior ministers resigned over her talks with a man she's previously branded unfit to govern. Another called it a punch in the face. Mrs. May said finding a solution involved all MPs and had conciliatory words for Mr. Corbyn.
There are actually a number of areas that we agree on in relation to Brexit. I think we both want to deliver leaving the EU with a deal. I think we both want to protect jobs. I think we both